Guide Florida Politics, powered by Gannett. Hello, I'm Sarasota Herald Tribune political editor Zach Anderson, and I'm joined as always from Tallahassee by Gannett State Capitol reporter John Kennedy. Hey, John.
Hello, Zach.
Well, it's been a really busy week, from the coronavirus coming to Florida to the Super Tuesday presidential primary elections in 14 states. We'll talk about the fallout in Florida from Super Tuesday and what it means for the state's March 17th presidential primary now that Michael Bloomberg is out of the race. We'll also look at how Governor Ron DeSantis is responding to coronavirus and what's happening as Florida's 60-day legislative session winds down. But first, you all know what that music means. It's number picking time. John, do you have a number for us this week?
Zach, my number is 16. Hey, it's almost time for March Madness, but you'll have to listen because maybe my number is not a sweet 16.
Sweet 16, we'll see. But I don't know, you're a good number picker. I think you'll make it to at least that round. My number is 380,615. So that's 16 for John, 380,615 for me. Write those numbers down, folks. We'll tell you what they mean in Florida politics after the show. Well, after weeks of Floridians waiting and watching from afar as coronavirus spread worldwide, the deadly health epidemic has finally arrived in America's third most populous state, and it has brought with it a lot of public concern and questions about the state's preparedness. News that there was a coronavirus case at Doctors Hospital of Sarasota began spreading widely on Sunday through Facebook and other sources. Late Sunday night, the state finally sent out a press release officially confirming the two coronavirus cases in Florida, the first two, actually, a Manatee County man in his 60s and a Hillsborough County woman in her 20s. Governor Ron DeSantis simultaneously directed his Surgeon General to declare a public health emergency. It later came out that state health officials knew about the positive coronavirus tests Saturday, but waited 24 hours to tell the public. And then, only after it leaked out and there was a flood of inquiries from the media, lawmakers, health officials, and others. Since then, a third person in Florida has tested positive for the virus, and a Florida resident in Washington State also has tested positive. DeSantis held a press conference Monday in Tampa to discuss the first two cases, and it got a little tense when his Surgeon General said they waited to tell the public, his reason being that they wanted to confirm the cases with the CDC first. DeSantis defended his administration's response, saying health officials have been proactive. John, this issue may be one of the biggest tests for DeSantis so far. In some ways, it's sort of like responding to a hurricane. How important do you think this moment is for the governor?
Well, it is a challenge for the governor. There's really not much by way of a political playbook for how to deal with an emerging pandemic. But I've spoken to some health scientists and academics who tell me that being visible and transparent are very important to reassuring the public. And as a leader, you want to appear that you have the answers, that citizens can trust you, and that you understand people's fears.
Do you think he's been transparent? I mean, they defended waiting 24 hours to tell the public about these positive tests by saying, well, we wanted to get them confirmed with the CDC. But for people who, might have been at a hospital where one of these patients were treated, they would want to know about this, right? I mean, the public wants to know so that they can take precautions.
Sure. And there was also, you recall, in the days leading up to that weekend, there was that confusion where on a Thursday, DeSantis said that they could not speak about how many people had been tested in Florida, and citing a state statute that he said, kind of prohibited this release of the information. And then a day later, the Surgeon General, Scott Rifkes, did go ahead and declare how many people had been tested. So there's been this sort of, push and pull regarding how much information they're willing to lead. I think you pointed out some of the awkward and the confusing ways that the news has been released. And it kind of shows that DeSantis isn't exactly meeting these goals that I just outlined. You look back on former Governor Rick Scott. Now, he was not a publicly warm or reassuring figure, really, but he had approval ratings about half that of DeSantis. But when the state was dealing with the Zika virus in 2016, Scott was very forward-looking and very visible in Miami-Dade, which was the main hotspot.
Yeah, he did the same thing in Hurricanes. I mean, Rick Scott really got out there on TV, in the public, whenever there was a big emergency, and seemed to realize that you have to be very aggressive in pushing out information. I mean, maybe it was because these tests happened on a Saturday night, and then it started leaking out on a Sunday when a lot of people were not at work. But when there's an emergency, you sort of activate everybody, right? I mean, it doesn't matter if it's Sunday afternoon or Friday night. I mean, you're supposed to sort of spring into action.
Sure. And during that time too, you recall the health department was very quick to provide updates and statistics, something that the department under DeSantis now is finally coming around to doing. But for the longest time in the early stages of coronavirus, the state health officials were largely referring the public to check the Centers for Disease Control website for hand washing techniques and the like. But now, even several days into the appearance of the virus, we're still waiting to hear more specifics from the governor's office on what is anticipated to be, a need for additional funding for the health department. Now there's also a good chance as the illness spreads that we're going to start seeing Florida take a hit in tourism with vacationers staying away and keeping their dollars out of the economy. There's going to be a drop in port traffic and goods coming in from China, which typically is pretty significant in Florida. The governor is going to have to look in command and able to take steps to offset some of these losses. And, all told, the public is going to be weighing just how DeSantis responds, and their own anxiety level is going to be a good judge of whether they think he's that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, it's a tricky situation. You don't want to panic people. The vast majority of people who contract this virus are not going to, even need medical treatment. They say, it's like the flu. You could just sort of wait at home for a few days until it passes. But the reality is people are kind of panicked about it. They see the news. They see what's happening in China. They see that people are dying in Washington state. This is, while it's not, it's not going to, wipe out, the population of Florida, it is something that could cause deaths in this state, and people are worried about it. So, it'll be interesting to see how he strikes that balance going forward between trying to reassure the public and say that the risk is manageable, while also, taking into account that people are very worried about this, and it could have some serious impacts on the health of individuals in the state, especially elderly people. And Florida, as we all know, has a lot of elderly people, and the mortality rate for elderly people with this virus has been higher. The deaths in Washington state have occurred in a nursing home there. So we have a lot of nursing home and assisted living facilities in Florida. It seems like that could be a big concern if the virus gets here and starts spreading in some of those facilities. Well, coronavirus is big news across the country, and so is the Democratic presidential primary, which has taken a dramatic turn over the last week. First, Joe Biden won South Carolina and knocked out two of his top opponents, Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg, who both ended up endorsing him. Now Biden appears to have won the most delegates out of the 14 states that voted on Super Tuesday. He did lose American Samoa to Michael Bloomberg, but Michael Bloomberg got wiped out in most of the all the other states, despite way outspending the former vice president, and he dropped out of the race on Wednesday and endorsed Biden. It was just 20 days ago that Bloomberg was opening campaign offices in Sarasota and all around Florida. The billionaire former New York City mayor was banking on doing well on Super Tuesday, and other states like Florida that vote later in the process. But Biden knocked him out by building momentum in the early state of South Carolina that carried over to Super Tuesday. And really, that's usually how these presidential nominating fights work. Whoever does really well in the early states tends to build up a big head of steam that is hard to stop. John, was Bloomberg naive to think that his money would allow him to bypass the grassroots campaigning in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, and focus on a state like Florida that votes 44 days after Iowa?
Yeah, he clearly miscalculated the power of momentum, and that's clearly what Biden got following South Carolina. You recall, though, you know, Biden was tanking after Iowa, New Hampshire, and the Nevada primaries, but he sort of sprang back to life with that big win in South Carolina, and that carried him to the overwhelming success on Super Tuesday. Of course, you know, in the interim, he was helped by the endorsements of Buttigieg and Klobuchar, the other centrist candidates. So it ultimately undermined what Bloomberg was about, you know, being the best middle of the roader and the best alternative to Bernie Sanders' progressivism and, you know, kind of scary for many, I guess, his democratic socialism. Florida probably would have been good for Bloomberg if Biden continued to stumble by March 17th, the day of the state's presidential primary. Florida is going to be the biggest primary state that's still on the table at that time. So that would, it's still going to, you know, carry some luster there for whoever can win it. But, you know, Bloomberg is a little like we recall Republican Rudy Giuliani in 2008, who he largely blew off Iowa and New Hampshire in his run for the Republican nomination. And he focused on Florida and its transplanted New Yorkers to give him a push. But when
Florida was moved up on the primary calendar that year, right, the Republicans moved it up. So it came right after South Carolina.
Yeah, it was early. I think it was very soon after Iowa and New Hampshire. It was January 29th, I think, that year. And the key thing for Giuliani in the end was when Republican Governor Charlie Crist endorsed John McCain right before the Florida primary. Giuliani wound up finishing third in Florida, and a day later he quit the campaign and endorsed McCain. So, you know, that kind of a rope-a-dope strategy of taking a beating in early states while waiting for one where you're, you know, positive that you're going to win. Well, in Bloomberg's case, many of the Super Tuesday contests, you know, it was the same strategy where he thought that, you know, he can coast through Super Tuesday and then here comes Florida. But it doesn't factor in the idea that somebody else can be gaining steam in that interim.
So, yeah, it's kind of a passive strategy. It takes the race out of your hands, out of your control. You're waiting to see what happens in the early states and hoping that no candidate is strong enough by the time they get to the states that you're investing in. But obviously that didn't happen for Bloomberg. So, John, Biden is now the front runner, and Florida now has the most delegates of any state left to vote. We award more than 200 delegates. Some people think that that's good news for Biden. Now that he has a delegate lead, he is well positioned because Florida tends to favor more moderate candidates. So it could help him nail down his victory and keep Sanders from overtaking him. What do you think? Do you think that Florida could play kingmaker for Biden?
Yeah, it really could by that time, because it'll still be sort of early in this you know, battle between, you know, what is emerging as the main battle, Biden versus Bernie. And, you know, it could be the coup de grace, you know, for Biden here against Bernie Sanders, where he gets enough delegates out of Florida that he expands enough of a primary lead that, you know, does Sanders ultimately surrender? Does he quit before they go into the later states and, you know, heading toward the convention? That, you know, the whole speculation that it's going to be a brokered convention is still out there. But, you know, this $500 million lesson for Bloomberg it was a costly one, obviously, but it has positioned Biden to be a very moderate candidate in a state that tends to go for centrist candidates, Florida, and older candidates. You know, a guy like Biden is going to fit in, though. While Sanders is an older candidate himself, his support base is clearly much younger, and that is not that much of a significant factor in Florida.
Yeah, I think Florida could still be significant. There's a second round of Super Tuesday states that vote before our March 17th primary. Next Tuesday is sort of the second Super Tuesday, and I think there's maybe six states that vote that day, and I read that that four of them, I think, went for Sanders in 2016 in his contest with Hillary Clinton. So, you know, it's quite possible that Sanders could have a decent night on this second Super Tuesday, or you know, whatever the delegate split could be fairly close. And then you go into Florida, and if past is precedent, You know, Hillary Clinton won Florida big in 2016 over Sanders. It is a state, a very diverse state, a lot of African-American voters, a state where Sanders might struggle because of Miami and the Latino voters from South America who have fled socialist regimes there. So Florida and Biden polled well in Florida. Bloomberg seemed to catch up with them, but now that Bloomberg is out, you know, Biden's would seem to be like the candidate who would potentially be the strongest in Florida. So if you, this second Super Tuesday is a wash or whatever happens, if Sanders maybe picks up some delegates or if Biden picks up a handful of delegates, it could position Florida to be decisive if Biden is able to do really well here. Well, lastly, John, as you're scrambling to cover the state's response to coronavirus, you've also been keeping an eye on what's happening as the 60-day legislative session winds down. Next week is the last week of session. There's a flurry of activity right now with bills dying and a lot of big proposals still up in the air. Tell us where things stand with some of the big issues you're tracking.
Well, you know, Zach, in Tallahassee, the old adage about everything being connected to everything holds true. Once again,
the unified theory of Tallahassee.
Yeah. I mean, you know, work on finalizing a state budget is tied up in other side deals. You know, among them, House Speaker Jose Oliva is wanting big healthcare changes, most of them kind of regulatory changes to health professionals. Some behind the scenes talk of trying to craft a new gaming compact with the Seminole tribe. And then there's, of course, big dollar numbers involving teacher pay and state worker raises, which is kind of an unusual topic for a Republican legislature to be talking about. But they're trying to finalize pay increases for both of these cohorts. And now with coronavirus out there, Governor DeSantis and the Senate's push to keep Visit Florida alive over Oliva's opposition to the tourist marketing agency, that's you know, taking on additional weight now, because there is the idea that, well, the state may have to start, you know, promoting itself even more when it comes to a reluctant tourist base. You
coronavirus know, could save Visit Florida.
Oh, absolutely. That could be the late savior for this agency that's been embattled for a couple of years now. It's looking like the governor is going to have to accept a kind of a modified version of his proposal to have all businesses use E-Verify. That's the federal database that's that checks the legal status of new hires. That's something that is clearly a swipe at immigration, and it kind of fits into the campaign themes of President Trump. But that was something that the governor had been promoting this session. But what we're seeing is that both the House and Senate are advancing ideas that would let businesses use some kind of verification system that's maybe not E-Verify. So we'll see how insistent the governor is on, you know, making it E-Verify or bust. But Oliva and Senate President Bill Galvano told legislators this week that the scheduled March 13th finish to the session is not going to be hit. They're not going to make their deadline. Galvano said that another day might be needed to approve the budget, while Oliva, he was not quite that precise. He suggested maybe a couple more days, maybe more even, might be needed to finish the session off. This being an election year, none of the legislators want to while away too much time in Tallahassee. This is campaign season. They want to get going on their reelection campaigns. And with Republican leaders at every top level of government, the party also doesn't want to look, you know, incompetent by deadlocking on things. But with at least a week to go in the session, it doesn't really look that clear about how a lot of policy issues will ultimately work themselves out. But, you know, remember, everything's connected to everything.
Sounds like the typical end of session chaos. I have a feeling, John, that you're going to be making frequent trips to the cafe on the 10th floor to refill your coffee cup.
Coffee, over the next, yeah. It's big time coffee time at the Capitol.
Well, we're going to move on to some number picking. John, you put out a Sweet 16. You want to tell us what that's all about?
I did. 16, Zach, are the number of Democratic candidates for president that are going to appear on the Florida presidential primary ballot on March 17th. Though candidates have been dropping like flies lately, the Florida ballot was frozen in time on December 11th when Secretary of State Laura Lee, she certified the 16 presidential candidate field on the Democratic side. The certification happened just about a week after Kamala Harris and Steve Bullock abandoned their campaigns for president. So they're among the notable names that won't appear on the ballot. But otherwise, voters, you know, can be looking at they're going to be considering the dwindling field of candidate. But when they look at the ballot, they're going to see, a trip down memory lane when they can look down the roster of Marianne Williamson, John Delaney, Cory Booker, and even Joe Sestak is on the Florida ballot. And then, of course, more recent dropouts, including the two billionaires, Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg, of course, is going to still have 20 Florida campaign offices still dotting the state. I guess he's probably paid the rent on them at least through the end of the month. And, here's one last bonus number. Only 48% of the almost 740,000 registered Democrats who requested mail-in ballots have sent them in, less than half. So there could be a crowd at these polling places on March 17th.
Well, John, I think we're overlapping here a little bit today because I had a similar thought. I looked at the absentee ballots that have been turned in. My number is 380,615. That's the number of Florida Democrats who have already cast ballots in the presidential primary. Why is that significant? Well, I'm thinking that it's possible that could hurt Joe Biden. There are a lot of voters who are going to Biden now that may have gone to Amy Klobuchar or Pete Buttigieg or Michael Bloomberg before Biden's strong performance in South Carolina and on Super Tuesday. The early voting, when you looked at the early voting coming in on Super Tuesday, it was less favorable to Biden because it did not reflect the reaction to his South Carolina win and the endorsements from Klobuchar and Buttigieg. So the longer people held on to their ballots, the more likely they were to sort of get swept up in that energy surrounding Biden's campaign since South Carolina. Now, you know, Biden still did very well on Super Tuesday, and it seems like he's positioned to do well in Florida. But when you're trying to build up a delegate lead, your margin of victory is important. So the early vote is something to pay attention to. Well, that wraps up another episode of Inside Florida Politics. I want to thank our audio production team of Thomas Cordy and Joseph Rosano. Thanks to all of you for listening. We're out of here.